Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are listening to the final M Squared TechCast for the year of our Lord 2017.
Hard to believe another year just gone by,
yep.
Right?
We've now been at this, 2 years and 3 months or so, something like that?
Yeah, I think this is 109.
Okay.
Like PT 109, but...
or Formula 409 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. But we've got a great show for you today. Lots of really interesting guests, and we can get right to it right away. Did want to remind you, this is our last show of 2017. We will be off next Monday, which is Christmas, the Monday after that, which is New Year's Day. We will be back in 3 weeks on January 8th. So
well, we wanted to do those shows, but Jessica, our engineer, refused to come in.
Yeah, she's not working Christmas. Yeah,
I don't know what's up with that. Why can't you work Christmas and New Year's? What's the problem?
Yeah, that's regular old Bob Cratchit.
How dare I?
Yeah. Can't wait to spend your money, right?
Okay. All right. Our first guest is Communications Director of the MSU Foundation. His name's Aaron Richard, and he is talking to us today about a pitch competition that's coming up. So, Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here. I'm a fan.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the Green Light competition.
Well, this is going to be the sixth annual Green Light pitch competition. This pitch competition started way back with MSU FCU. They were having these small pitch competitions, and our director of student community engagement saw this pitch competition going on, and he said, "Look, you know, I'm happy to take this into the greater sphere and have this be a really public event." MSU FCU came on board as a sponsor, and then MEDC came on board, and it's grown ever since. This year, last year and this year, we offered $100,000 in cash prizes, with the top prize being $40,000.
So what is the top prize this year? Do you have that figure established yet, or is it still fluid?
I believe that we're sticking with 40, but I'm gonna hedge my bets here and be mum on that for right now. I believe it will be 40, but if it's larger, I don't think anybody's going to complain, right?
No, absolutely not. So everybody can submit, but you'll call it down to I must admit, him and I have been talking previous to this, so I'm a little confused. Is it 20 that you call it down to, or somewhere in that ballpark to get to the finals?
Somewhere in that ballpark. Okay. Yeah, we received last year over 200 applications,
wow.
And we winnowed it down to our top 50, and then we winnowed it down further with our senior staff here, getting their picks in, and we were absolutely impressed. I mean, every year over year, we keep getting higher quality applications coming in, and we're just so thrilled that this is taking off. This has become a precursor to Accelerate Michigan, which is a fantastic event. I'm sure you're aware of Accelerate Michigan. And we really view this as sort of the precursor to that.
Yeah, that's a $1 million contest.
Yes, it is. So you go from 100,000 to $1 million. That's not bad.
Yeah, I should say so. So what kind of companies are you looking for this competition?
So we look at everything. You know, we don't stay in one lane. We want to see entrepreneurs who are, you know, invigorated and alive and ready to go and hitting the bricks and really are ready to invest in themselves and their ideas. The great thing about this pitch competition is that you don't have to have an already established business. If you have an idea and you want to pitch it, you can pitch. But if you do own a business, it has to be a little bit less than 2 years old. So their incorporation time would have to, by application time, they'll have to have been established before March 28th, 2016.
And so right now you're open, and it's open until when I go through my story here. I'm trying to remember. When does that close?
It's open until February 28th.
Ah, okay,
applications are open until February 28th. So you've got a little while. We're heading into the holidays, so I know that some people are probably going to be sitting back on their couches and enjoying, you know, eggnog.
Yeah, even in studio, enjoying eggnog.
And so, you know, the entrepreneurs who hopefully have a second to take a look at their news feeds and see that this competition is right up their alley, we hope that they apply.
All right. So you're not just looking for tech companies. You're also looking for companies from all industries. I heard that there is also a push for more women entrepreneurs this year too, right?
Yeah. You know, we are really, we want to welcome and be an inclusive competition. And I think across the board, I think men have a propensity to sort of go out and take the risk immediately. Women want to be very sure that this is where they want to go and what track they are. So they're a little bit more deliberate, and I respect that 100%. And so we just want to make sure that we're bringing everybody into the fold, and we want to see more women innovators, more women entrepreneurs that are heading into this competition.
And if you go to the story that's on MI Tech News, you will see the history of how many women have participated in previous years. It's still a minority, although one year you did have 9 females out of 25 companies. That's not real bad.
That's not really bad. And I, you know, I would love to see, you know, that 50-50 ratio would be lovely. A little bit more is fine too. I think that there is room at the table for everyone, and we want to make sure that this is, as I said, an inclusive competition.
So where does the money come from? Who puts up the money for this competition?
So we have, if you head over to greenlightmichigan.com, again, greenlightmichigan.com, you can see our list of sponsors. So we've got 3 spotlight sponsors right now. We're so proud to be adding McLaren Greater Lansing to the mix. And then we've got the Michigan Economic Development Corporation and the Michigan State University Federal Credit Union, who are our spotlight sponsors. They've contributed over $25,000 to sponsor the prizes and the contest. And then we have various sponsorship levels. We're happy to see a few folks who have come into the fold. I know that Invest Detroit is coming into the fold, and they've helped to sponsor for several years. So there's room for a whole bunch of there's room for more sponsorships. If you're interested, please, you know, go ahead, greenlightmichigan.com, click on sponsor, and you can find out how to become one.
Now, the top prize is somewhere in the ballpark of $40,000, but how many places get money beyond number one?
So we have several levels. There are student levels, and those are typically reserved for MSU students who entered into the competition. And then we've got the $40,000 historically, $40,000, and then we go to $15,000, and then to $10,000, and then to $2,500 on down.
Now, do you know? I probably ask you this, but we didn't get that. The track record of some of the winners. I know you've got the female winners listed there and whatnot and investing, but have several of them gone on to bigger and better things, commercialized products? They're bigger companies now. Do you have to know any that you could name?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I'm really proud of Vade Nutrition. They have a protein shake that, you know, how you have to use a scoop to, you know, that's really inconvenient and whatever. So you can grab a packet with this that dissolves as you shake it, and it creates a great shake. So Vade Nutrition was our $25,000 winner last year. Switch Source, which is about making our power grids more efficient, they have gone on. They won $10,000 last year. They've gone on to various pitch competitions, and they're doing well. MySwim Pro, which is an Ann Arbor company, they have taken off like gangbusters. And, you know, they've gone on to great success in our top app within the Apple Store. There are several companies like MTBI Sense, which is a concussion sensor for headgear for sports, and they are producing product and they're moving right along. I'm just going down the list here. I've seen a few people go on to AMIC to success. If you look at 2016 winners, Split is one of those that has gone into success. So a lot of folks that go to these competitions and begin to win some capital, they go on and they do some really great things. And I think that speaks to the value that these competitions add to the entrepreneurial community here.
So is there going to be an event where the finalists make pitches in public in front of a panel or something, or how's the winner chosen?
That is a really great question. So we do have a panel of judges, and on March 28th, which is Wednesday of 2018, people will be able to come to the Wharton Center for the Performing Arts here in East Lansing. Our event starts at 4:30 and we'll go till about 8-9 o'clock. They will pitch in front of a panel of judges, and there we go. You know, they get an opportunity not only to network with some really amazing people, and seriously, that's kind of what this is all about, is that you're connecting folks to one another, so that the relationships last longer than the pitch competition. But folks come and pitch in front of judges, and the judges select the winners.
And is that like the final exam? How much does that count towards the final grade, as it were?
So they come in, they do their training, and then they do the pitches. They're decided right then and there. It's sort of worth the whole ham hock.
Wow, a little pressure, huh?
No, yeah. No pressure at all.
Yeah, nothing. Nothing too pressure packed there. If your whole grade relies on that. So who does the winning from like the initial down to the semifinalists? Is that something you?
I'm folks sorry. Can you repeat that question?
Who does the winning down to the semifinalists? Is that something the MSU staff handles there, or what?
So the staff between the MSU Foundation and Spartan Innovations, and then MSU Technologies and MSU Business Connect, those of us here over at the MSU Innovation Center, we begin to winnow down the applications. We've got some great folks that have been in the entrepreneurial community, including Paul Jakes and Lori Fisher, community members here who have a stake in the game, if it were. They begin to winnow down those applications, and then we pass them on to final judges.
Okay. We have just a little under a minute left, so why don't you give people the website where they need to go for more information, or to register, or to become a sponsor.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the time today. If you go to www.greenlightmichigan.com, you can click on apply to throw your company into the hat to pitch at the contest, and then you can click on register to join us for the event on March 28th. Just know the applications close on February 28th.
You can also find the same information in a story that I featured in MI Tech News today. So
a fine story, I'll add, Mike.
Thank you very much, Aaron. The check's in the mail. So,
all right. Well, on that note, thank you very much, Aaron Richard, Communications Director at the MSU Foundation, with lots of neat details on the 6th Annual Green Light Entrepreneur Competition. We'll be right back with our next segment here on the M2 TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are indeed listening to the M2 TechCast on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU 5th among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you're back with M Squared TechCast, and we're waiting for someone to come in from Lawrence Tech, but we're not sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, so I am going to talk a little bit about Lawrence Tech's ongoing transformation from sort of night and weekend graduate school into a residential college. We're waiting on our Dean of Students here. But one of the things that's been happening with Lawrence Tech over the years is that it's become less and less popular for companies to sponsor master's degrees, you know, for their employees. And
less popular?
Yeah. Wow. And that's you know, used to be sort of our bread and butter was night and weekend courses. Mm-hmm. That was how the school kind of got its start. Huh. But over the past 10 years or so, Lawrence Tech has become much more of a traditional residential college. We have a fourth residence hall under construction right now that's going to have over 300 students in it. When that residence hall is finished, we're going to have over 1,100 students living on campus, which is a pretty significant number for a college campus. And so it's, you know, much more of a traditional school. The addition of sports back in 2011 also meant that we have 22, 23 sports teams now at Lawrence Tech. We're adding football next fall. So we're going to have close to 500 athletes running around campus as well.
Wow. So, and these are, you don't, this is going to sound horrible, but I'll say it anyway. You don't normally associate brainiacs with athletes, you know, so.
Well, and that's sort of the way that we're approaching this is that, you know, you're a smart kid, you want to study engineering or architecture or science or medicine or something like that. So you come to Lawrence Tech and you used to have to, if you really enjoyed playing a sport as a high school student, you used to have to give it up because we didn't offer that other than intramurals. And we've had a club hockey team for years and years. But other than that, you know, you had to give it up. Well, now you have a chance to continue to play the sport you love and get a terrific education. And because it's at the level of sport that it is, we're in something called the NAIA, the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics. That's the other NCAA. You know, we can offer scholarships, but it's at a, I think, a much more balanced level than Division I athletics.
I think Kevin may be joining.
Kevin, are you with us?
No, this is not Kevin. This is Joyce. You don't want me to talk while you're on the air, so.
Okay. Is he unable to join us today? Joyce?
Unable to join. He's at a funeral with Dr. Voss.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, that explains that. Okay.
Thanks, Joyce.
All right. Thanks, Joyce. We'll edit this out on the podcast version, and we'll go from here.
Okay. So. Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Bye.
So getting back to so that's be like Hope College and Aquinas College.
Yeah, Aquinas is in the NAIA. Spring Arbor is. What's the one in Adrian? It's a Catholic school. I can never remember the name of it. Siena Heights.
Oh, okay.
Siena Heights.
Yeah.
Concordia and Ann Arbor, you know, that's, they're all in the NAIA.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a more balanced approach to college athletics where, yes, you'll have practice every day, but it'll be 2 or 3 hours. It won't be like a full-time job, you know, like it is at the Division I level where
it's a
full-time job and the classes are kind of an afterthought, especially during your season. So,
yeah. That's what I said. That's interesting. That's good. And then, what else is going on at Lawrence Tech? This is your segment.
Well,
here,
we've got a new nursing program. We've got 30 students enrolled in nursing at Lawrence Tech. My personal favorite story, and it's a feature that I have yet to write for our website and magazine, is that. But if there's any reporters out there listening that are looking for a great story idea, I'd be happy to let them do it instead of me. Of our 30 nursing students, 7 are football players. So we've got football playing nurses.
Yeah, they're just
that's not
different.
I'm
not making any judgment here. I just don't think I've ever heard of that before.
Well, the way I put it is, they will hurt you and then they will heal you. They can can do both. You know,
yeah, so it's like some women I've been with. You know,
Yeah, we don't need to get into your
life here. Okay, yeah. So,
So we've got a new nursing program that's going terrific. Much love to our partners at Providence for that. Providence Hospital at 9 Mile and is right down the street from Lawrence Tech, practically there in Southfield. But we've also got clinical rotations for our students available at literally dozens of, there's 6 hospitals, but there's other places too, of Providence facilities around the Detroit area where students who may be commuters can do their clinical stuff at a location that's convenient to their home rather than at campus if they're not living on campus. We've also got the Marburger STEM Center that's up and running and, and going like mad. We're doing a lot of K-12 outreach for the STEM and STEAM disciplines. We have a very close relationship with a K-8 magnet school in the Detroit Public Schools called the Sampson Weber Academy that's on the west side of Detroit.
Now, what I've never heard of those. What do they do there?
Well, it's sort of a special science and tech elementary and middle school.
Oh.
And we have about a dozen, we call them Blue Devil Scholars, that we have pledged significant financial aid to if they continue with the program. So we want them to eventually be Lawrence Tech students coming out of Detroit. The most exciting thing we probably announced, it was announced last week and it made the Free Press and the Oakland Press. It was the Blue Devil Southfield Scholars Program. That's something that's brand new. What's going to happen is we, in conjunction with the Southfield Public Schools, are going to set up a committee to pick 50 students a year. Out of the Southfield Public Schools that will receive half tuition scholarships to Lawrence Tech, which is a significant chunk of change since it's a private school. And if they pursue STEAM disciplines, and we define that pretty broadly, science, technology, engineering, and then the A part in STEAM instead of just regular STEM, the A part is architecture and the arts and mathematics for the M. So, you know, we've got great programs in all of those disciplines and, you know, the kids seem really excited about it. The Southfield school administrators certainly seem really excited about it, but we're setting aside $3.5 million in scholarship money for this program.
Wow.
So that's a pretty big deal.
This is middle school, high school, or
it'll be both. The Blue Devil Scholars, Southfield Scholars will be at the high school level. We're also doing, enrichment activities at the middle school level. We're going to adopt one of the Southfield middle schools. We're going to do summer programs in the Southfield middle schools. We're going to do programs on Saturdays. We have our Extreme Science Saturdays at Lawrence Tech. If anybody's interested in those, the Extreme Science Saturdays are actually open to the public. So if you have a kid who's interested in science and would like to do, you know, cool stuff at Lawrence Tech, you know, with science and technology, then those are also available. But we will be doing a special outreach program to the Southfield Public Schools with the Extreme Science Saturdays as well.
Ah.
So, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there. You know, the sports teams are doing well. Our women's basketball team is rated 22nd in the country in small college, which is pretty cool. Yeah, they've only lost a couple games this year. And like I said, next year we will have a football team. They'll be playing sort of a limited schedule. Their first year, the fall of 2018, they'll play a limited schedule, but they're going to start playing a full varsity schedule the fall of 2019. And by that time, you will start seeing a proper football stadium alongside Northwestern Highway there in the area of campus that's long been known as The Point. It used to have a couple of like intramural softball fields on it, and then it had a soccer field on it, and now it has a really nice field turf field on it. It's got some bleachers there. Seating's only for about 500.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
How many does it seat?
Yeah, well, we the plan for a multi-purpose athletic facility, a multi-purpose athletic stadium there, because it'll have not just football, but also soccer and lacrosse will be there, is for 4,000 seats, proper locker room, a team room with a weight room, you know, that kind of thing. So we're just getting off the ground a fundraising campaign for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a $20 million project around there somewhere.
Wow.
The other thing that's going on sports-wise is part of the Southfield Public Schools deal that we have with them. It's a memorandum of understanding for a great many things. And one of the things is that some of their athletic facilities are underutilized or barely utilized in the Southfield Public Schools. So we're going to start using them for practice and training. Some
makes
of the Southfield
sense.
Public School stuff. So
gratis, or do you have to pay them for it?
I don't know how that works.
something will be worked out, I'm sure.
Yeah, right? Yeah. We might invest some money in their facilities to improve them, and then call it square that way too.
Yeah,
you know, depends on what we need. So I do not know yet what's the part of that. The language in the memorandum of understanding was pretty broad, and so I think it can be implemented in a number of different ways.
And then I know it's early to talk about the summer camp program, but
oh yeah, no, it's not actually. If you're interested in LTU summer camps, we've got a bunch of really cool summer camps that we have for high school kids, kids entering freshman through senior years of their educations. My personal favorite was really kind of gross, but some kids are really into that thing.
Personal favorite was gross.
Yeah, well, it was a sort of a CSI type thing, you know, sort of a crime scene investigation thing, forensics.
With the cadaver or something?
Well, it was, I guess, with a piece of dead meat, and you could tell how long it had been dead by how many generations of flies had lived in and had babies in the meat. So.
Ah, yeah.
And that's one of the ways when they find a body. Yeah, that's really gross. And that's one of the, it's really gross and really cool. That's one of the ways they figure out how long somebody's been dead is they can spot how many generations of flies have lived and died and built elaborate civilizations. Oh, no, not really. In the body. So. But there's
there's more
traditional things.
Yeah.
You know, like automotive design, product design. You know, if you have an arty bent, you know, there's architectural engineering, there's architecture and interior design, automotive design, biomedical engineering, build an Android app, business and entrepreneurship, civil engineering, computer networking, game art. Yeah, our game art program has become really huge because games aren't just for games anymore. Games are also for employee training.
Yep.
So we have we've been consistently ranked for the past 3 years one of the top 50 gaming and game art programs in the country by the people who rate those things.
Huh.
The other good ones in Michigan are at Michigan State and Ferris State. Well, so
Kalamazoo Valley Community College, I believe, has a pretty good one too.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, at the 2 year level. Yep.
Right.
Well, what's neat about ours is that the computer scientists get to work with real artists in the architecture school, and the artists get to work with real computer scientists. That's kind of the neat cross pollinization that you get there from our product design and automotive design work too, is that these folks work and take classes side by side with, you know, pretty hardcore mechanical engineers. So they aren't going to design something that's impossible to manufacture, which is a problem sometimes with product design.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they're very grounded in real world applications of the stuff that they're learning. Let's see, we also have a nanotech summer camp where you get to build miniature machines, sketching, visual communication, mathematics, managing your money. That would be a good one to start with young, if only I had known then.
Yes. What money? What
the yeah, right. You know, graphic design, you know, all that kind of stuff. So the summer camps are open for enrollment right now. You can go to ltu.edu and just look around for summer camps. And there's a video there about, you know, with a testimonial of some of the kids who have taken them and really enjoyed them.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we're going to have 300 and some more students living on campus next fall. So we're looking forward to a good spring semester. The graduation ceremony is the first weekend in May, like it usually is. And we're going to be handing out 900 some, you know, diplomas and certificates and all of that good stuff. So, you know, it's another good year.
Okay. Well, now, where's the bell? I'm looking for the shameless plug bell.
Oh, man, the shameless plug bell is a little on the dead side. There.
Yeah, like thunk, thunk. There you go. All right. So go ahead. Give us the shameless plug. Now, how do they learn more, Matt?
Well, they go to ltu.edu, and they can find all sorts of stuff there. It's our recently redesigned website. It looks really spiffy.
Wow.
Okay. All right. So that concludes this segment in Today in LTU. For right now, this is Matt Roush.
You did good, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Unfortunately, we had someone have an emergency come up that was supposed to appear here today. They couldn't make it.
But
in,
you did a fine fill-in job.
Thank you very much.
That's why they pay you the big bucks, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. This is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Roush.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast. We'll be back with a lawyer. Yes, really.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are listening to the M Squared TechCast on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Hopefully the only podcast you're listening to right now.
Yes, because it would be distracting to try to listen to more than one.
You know, watch TV, read, listen to the podcast, multitask. And then we have with us Brian Wassum, who's been on the show before back in August, September. I'm not sure exactly when it was.
Back in spring-ish, summer-ish.
Summer-ish.
It was warm.
It was
so
warm.
Much warmer outside than it is today.
Heck of a lot warmer.
Yep.
And so he's doing the Warner and Norcross and Judd segment. Thank you, Joe Melnick, an old buddy of mine. The shameless. There we go. Okay. And so, but a couple things Brian's going to talk about. He's been named as the chair. This is a long one, so I got to take a breath. The American Intellectual Property Law Association Copyright Committee. Dang. So that's a long one. So what does that mean?
It's a lot of words and a lot of work that I don't get paid for, is what it boils down to.
No good there.
Yeah, it's all for the love of the field. Copyright law has always been a passion of mine since, you know, back in law school days. And so now I get a chance to help lead this organization that really has plays a big role in shaping IP law policy in Washington, D.C. and across the country.
Ah, okay. And so what? So, for instance, some of the cases that you're working on, or other lawyers are working on, then you discuss those, or how does it all play out?
Well, there are several subcommittees, and a lot of work that this committee does. It actually was awarded Committee of the Year at the last AIPLA annual conference, for anyone tracking that sort of thing. But what it boils down to is different advocacy for, you know, the interests of copyright practitioners and owners in various fields. We have a group, for example, that will write what's called an amicus brief or a support brief for a particular party in an important piece of copyright litigation in front of an appeals court or the Supreme Court. We have folks like me who work on liaisoning with the Copyright Office to try and help them modernize their processes in ways that speed everything along for people trying to get copyrights and protect their copyrights. One project we've just started working on is interfacing with them on trying to update their e-filing system to make it easier for folks at home to file a copyright application online rather than the cumbersome paper process they've traditionally had to use, or even the current website, which, you know, is an improvement but leaves something to be desired.
And speaking of patent, I guess there's a patent office opening in the Detroit area, right? That's what I'm hearing?
Patent office. There has been one here for a couple of years,
well,
actually.
Well, there has been. Yeah. Okay. I thought there was a new one opening. I guess I got bad information there.
I mean, there could be, but that copyright's really my focus.
Okay. Moving right along, the bigger news here is back in the summer, I don't know the time frame exactly, you were handling a court case in Milwaukee that involved augmented reality with Pokemon Go, I believe it was. I'm doing this from memory. I'm trying to find I'm searching on my computer to find the story. But essentially, you won that case. So let's talk a little bit about that. What that means for First Amendment rights for augmented reality.
Yeah. So you got all the buzzwords right. That was back in April of this year. We filed that lawsuit. And it's really been percolating ever since July of 2016 when the Pokemon Go app came out. And just to recap, you know, real quickly, Milwaukee tried to get more clever than other cities and regulate not only the people playing the game who were out, you know, trampling the daisies and littering in public parks and other things that they didn't like, but they went one step further and started to regulate the companies publishing location-based AR games, really all out of fear that these games were going to somehow lead to mass hordes of video gamers taking over the city, and really out of ignorance ignorance of their limitations as a government under the First Amendment. So we took it upon ourselves to remind them of those limitations. And on July 20th of this year, the federal court in Milwaukee agreed with us, issued a pretty strong preliminary injunction striking down that ordinance on First Amendment grounds.
So this is great news for everybody that's involved in virtual reality, augmented reality, that sort of thing, right?
It is, because the opinion's very strong, and what it does is validate our arguments that augmented reality, virtual reality, these new platforms for publishing speech and content are just as much protected by the First Amendment as anything else, as newspapers, TV, the internet, you name it. And what's the latest news in this case, and why we're talking about it again today, is because just 4 days ago, actually, on December 14th of this year, the Milwaukee Board of Supervisors voted to approve the settlement that I had worked out with their attorneys. It's a slow-moving process, this municipal litigation process. We worked this settlement out actually a few months ago, but it is now official. It's all but the paperwork. We get that filed, and what the settlement does is make that preliminary ruling a permanent one. They agreed, and you can watch the video of their debate online, which I did with some satisfaction of them admitting that they had overstepped and gotten the First Amendment wrong. And they're also going to pay a large chunk of our attorney's fees, which is
that was my next question. Is there any money involved here, right? I imagine litigation is expensive kinds of stuff, right?
It is, yeah. And we negotiated. We give them a little slice off the top. But the large lion's share, some of our attorney's fees, is being paid by the county.
And then the Pokemon, what's the company that owns Pokemon Go? That's can't remember the darn name.
It's called Niantic.
Yeah.
But they actually started this ball rolling by getting everybody upset about Pokemon. But it was actually, and I want to make sure to mention, it was not that company, but a different company called Candy Lab.
Oh, Candy Lab. That's
yeah,
right. Yeah.
Out of Irvine, California. They published a similar location-based AR game called Texas Rope'em.
That's right, yeah.
It was based off the old Texas Hold'em theme in AR. And they've come out since with some other interesting location-based apps, and I would really recommend that you check them out. But they unlike other folks in this space, took the risk of standing up for the industry, and it's really paid off.
Well, that's great. So is this something that comes up in the new group that you're the chairman of? Is that something you guys would go over and discuss?
It is. Coincidentally, we spent our monthly lunch meeting today talking about exactly that, about this case, getting everybody up to speed on what it represents, but also, you know, the future. AR is something we care about because, I've been invested in myself personally and professionally for several years, because I really believe it's going somewhere. I really believe that this is the platform that a lot of new and interesting content is going to be published on. And I really want to be at the forefront of not only thought leadership, but also, you know, litigation and legal representation for the folks out there making this content.
All right. So what else is going on? What else are you working on? Anything interesting?
I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Okay. Yeah, well, I can't do that. So. Yeah.
No, it's there are things that fall into that bucket, but it just seems like there are a lot of people that want to get sued nowadays. Right now, I'm working on chasing down some people that don't want to get served.
No,
yeah. So the travails of daily litigator life.
Well, let's get back to the future of AR and VR. You know, you're an expert in that area. We have some knowledge in that area. I know it's really hot. For instance, VR is being looked at for, gosh, telemedicine, as you say, training, because then you're in that total immersive atmosphere for training. But, I mean, what a lot of folks are saying, that's wonderful, but AR is really going to be the lion's share of this market going forward. Do you agree?
I do. And, you know, I would not be so obnoxious as to call myself an expert, but I have been spending several years learning this field, meeting the folks that are running these companies, going to their expos, speaking to them. So yeah, I'm actively and professionally very much involved and have put a lot of thought into this. And yes, the answer to your question is I do think, and you know, others such as Tim Cook, you know, head of Apple, has said the same thing multiple times. You know, VR is interesting. It's a niche for those who like to sit there with a box on their face, but it's limited to those folks and is never going to go beyond those folks because that's what VR is. It's totally closed off from the outside world, and there's a demand for that for certain gaming and other applications. I can't wait to see the movie Ready Player One about that whole idea. It's a great book, but you know, AR is really the open ended platform where you can take any digital information you can conceive of and ultimately blend it with any physical surroundings that you can conceive of in any way that you can conceive of.
Wow.
Okay. So you know, AR though is the thing that's being eyed for a whole bunch of applications, right? Not just gaming, but training, security. Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I want to tell you about another AR company that I've worked with over the years called Daqri, D-A-Q-R-I.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. They just opened, and you guys may have even talked about them recently because they just opened an office here in Detroit and focus on the automotive industry. So for a long time now, they've been focused on industrial augmented reality applications. And their signature product is something they call the Smart Helmet, and they've got a spinoff of that, an update called the Smart Glasses. You can kind of conceive what those look like, but they are visualization tools for the worker out in the field or in the factory, any kind of customized application you can think of to look at a particular machine, for example, and have instructions overlaid in your field of view of how to fix this machine or how to diagnose it. Whether you're putting parts together and you find you get the instructions up in your field of view, or you're walking past a machine and you have thermographic sensors built into your helmet that tells you if that machine's overheating, even if you can't see that with the naked eye, really empowering the individual worker to do the jobs that otherwise, you know, might go to robots or some other automated process, really, really giving that capacity back to the human being.
Yeah. We have actually a company at our LTU collaboratory, the business incubator, called Live Picture, that's working with Daqri on some other applications of that technology. Like if you're at an auto dealership or something and you see a car in the showroom and you say, well, gee, I wonder what that would look like in a different color. You can pop those glasses on and it'll, you know, while you're looking at the car, it'll change the color of it.
Steve Couchman though, that does that. Right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're doing a great job.
Yeah. And, or if you want it at a different option level or a different trim level, or you wonder what it would really look like, would it really look all that different with the 19-inch wheels instead of the 18s, you know, that kind of thing.
Well,
you could do all that.
Exactly. They're the folks that really get, you know, how this is actually useful technology, right? Unlike a lot of the VR applications that we see, and there are some useful applications there, but AR really lends itself to doing something productive in the real world. And, you know, I mentioned putting parts together. I want to mention another company that was on the cover of Cranes this spring, which was Ops Solutions out in Wixom. They're doing some really cool stuff with projected AR that you don't use a wearable for, but it's actually projectors beaming light onto your workstation or onto a product, even in three dimensions, giving the worker step-by-step instructions on what to do to that object, really reducing errors. All these industrial applications have been shown to reduce worker errors by a phenomenal percent.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Star Wars right now with the foot-tall Princess Leia in the hologram that's being projected. Obi-Wan Kenobi, help us.
Yeah,
you know,
only you can help me.
Is it along those lines, kind of like that or not?
Well, there's no 3D holograms, but they don't need to be. You know, you don't need to have cutesy stuff like that. You need to have stuff that's useful. And I actually got a chance to tour Ops Solutions facilities just a couple weeks ago and saw what they're doing. Really cool, really useful stuff.
Yeah, and for factory floor type applications, it's like
don't need Princess Leia for that, right?
Don't put the part on this way, put it that way. Yeah. Don't move in this direction, move in that direction. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that businesses run on and that, you know, people care about.
Yep.
All right, we've only got about 30 seconds. Brian, so go ahead. And people are all excited. They want to get in touch with you.
Contact info, yes.
If you're trying to serve them, they may not be wanting to reach you. But otherwise, how do they do that?
WNJ.com is where you find all that information. BWASM@WNJ. And you want to read my writings on augmented reality, that's at augmentedlegality.com.
I like that.
Blog I've been posting that for several years.
Okay. Well, I'm going to bookmark that one.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much, Brian Wassum from Warner, Norcross, and Judd. We'll be right back with more of the M-Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are indeed listening to the M-Squared TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We are proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network.
And joining us from New York on that old-fashioned technology called a telephone.
Twisted pair, yeah.
That's right.
Is Tim Moynihan, who is the editorial services and media strategist for Airfoil Group, located, like, if I had a really strong arm, I could hit the building with a rock from here, but that'd be a heck of a throw, right? So it's about a mile away here in lovely Royal Oak. So what's going on right now these days with PR in the digital age? Take it away, Tim.
Hey, thanks for having me back on the show. Well, I think the main thing to think about is that it's easier than ever to reach the general public and reporters through, you know, several different channels now: social, email, traditional print, TV, video, online video, all that kind of thing. But as easy as it is, you have to remember on the recipient's end, they're also getting bombarded with thousands of other things from all different platforms. So in terms of PR for the digital age, you know, our main goal is to communicate effectively. And the entire world has changed in the past 10 years, right? There's all these different platforms. There's all these different devices. People are liking to get their content in different ways. So what we're doing is through research and analytics and figuring out how things work and what people's preferences are, we're trying to make it so that we can communicate effectively with all the different people that we need to communicate with.
All right. So I have some of the talking points in front of me, which I've just now shared with Matt. Last show of the year, so it's like a little discombobulated here, you know. So why social is the new Google? I can do it. Why do you think that is?
Well, Google, I worked as a journalist for 2 decades before joining Airfoil Group. And
congratulations on your recovery, by the way.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
And, you know, what? As you guys probably well know, the best way to deliver your message or your story to a bigger audience or your podcast used to be just you figure out what works with search engines, right? You figure out, all right, this headline is going to be appealing, so that if people search for these terms on Google, it's going to get a lot of hits and it's going to drive a lot of traffic to the site. Google is now kind of taking a back seat to social reach. Google's still insanely important, very, very important, but a story can gain a lot of traction on Twitter and Facebook before it even surfaces on Google. And, you know, both of those networks really have a wide reach, a very diverse reach. It might be reaching unique readers or unique viewers that, you know, you have struggled to reach before. So they have this sort of organic thing going for them. And the important thing is that if you have a good social strategy, if you have a lot of followers, if you're active on social, if people are gravitating to your social networking content, that can influence where you place on Google now as well. So they're all sort of intertwined, where it used to be, you know, you write good search engine optimized content and you are good. Now it's sort of like you need a very good social strategy to be able to do anything.
Let me follow up on that. What is a very good social strategy?
Well, I mean, that depends on the brand and the work that you're doing. A lot of them, you know, you see the whole gamut of brands on social, where some of them are more, you know, personable. They sort of act, they're very clear about, like, there's a person behind this, you know, interacting with people. Another one I used yesterday, I needed, you know, support for, I ordered tickets and the tickets hadn't showed up. And, you know, rather than going through email, which I tried and didn't get a response right away, like within seconds, I would get a response on Twitter, because I think there's a visibility there that brands want to, you know, they look like they're on the ball. They look like they're doing their job. And because it's a social medium, that becomes obvious to everybody.
Hmm. Interesting.
All right. One of the things you mentioned here, and one of the things we've certainly noticed, is the ascendancy of video in all of this, in communications in general, and social media in particular. What are you telling your clients about how to prepare for the video first future?
Well, the reality inside newsrooms now is that, you know, everything from magazines to, you know, newspapers to anybody with an online presence is going after video. They're trying to bulk up their video presence. There's a lot of ad dollars being spent in video at the moment. So I think for a client, it's important to think about, okay, what does that entail on your end? There are a lot of publications that might not have, you know, a full, huge video team that can put things together. And, you know, it really helps them to have assets like B-roll and raw video of a product in action or you know, interviews in action that they can use as part of news packages or video segments. The other thing is that, you know, even other publications might not have a video team at all. So it comes down to a brand, or especially if it's a visual or product oriented piece of news or announcement, it's important to have your own video that's, you know, visually compelling that people can gravitate to, even if the site that is hosting it doesn't have its own video team. It's sort of, you know, a YouTube clip or a Vimeo clip or something like that. That can really drive eyeballs and drive traffic. People are gravitating towards video. There's a recent piece of research that says something like 80% of web traffic next year is going to be video.
Yeah, I've heard
so,
that.
So it's huge. So, you know, publications are gravitating towards that. And I think that clients really need to gravitate towards that as well. They need to sort of help them meet in the middle.
But you will be, since we do video, I am amazed, how do I phrase this kindly, of the lack of understanding of what the necessary tools are to pull this off. You know, I can shoot the talking head, but it's pretty uninteresting. And when I use the word B-roll, they look at me blankly like, what? You know?
Like you're speaking Urdu or something.
Yeah, right. And I go, okay, that's like you're talking about how you're fixing something in the shop, and then what we do is you keep talking, you're the voiceover, and we cut to an example of the video, streaming video of fixing something in the shop.
Yeah, you can't just have a video of a talking head. It looks like a newscast from 1958.
Yeah, right? Pretty much, yeah. So that may be a function, I lived on the West Coast for 10 years and then on the East Coast for 5, where you are. People there seem to get it much more than folks here in the heartland. So how do you educate them on video?
On how to produce video?
Well, yeah, just that they need it because they haven't bought into this yet, and B, how to do it. You know, I mean, it's something I had to learn. I'm an old news guy, it's just telling story in another medium is all.
Yeah, news is news and writing is writing. Right, you still have to write a script.
There you go. Yeah. So, I mean, how do you guys at Airfoil, how do you guys work with your clients to say, you know, you really need to do video and these are the elements that you need? How do you do that?
That, you know, that also depends on the project in question. A lot of things just have an obvious visual hook, right? If there's a piece of technology or a company that's doing something amazing in terms of manufacturing or, you know, building cars and future looking technologies, those in it themselves have a very visual element that people are drawn to. Sometimes it's more of a challenge. Sometimes, as you said, it needs to be sort of a talking head video. But that, you know, you can be creative in the ways you light it. You really need, you know, to think things other than the message that you're trying to convey. It has to have good production values, because one of the tricky spots about today's technology is that everybody has access to, you know, smartphone cameras that can shoot pretty good video,
yeah,
which means that you get a bunch of videos that look the same, right?
Yep, pretty much.
So it has to go above and beyond that and really get creative. We help, you know, clients develop creative ideas for their products and the messages that they want to deliver. But it comes down to, you know, making that investment and having people that have the know-how in the production department.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, it's taken me about a year to really get video editing down, so I appreciate the difficulty, and I need to upgrade to a better video editing program myself, because I've kind of done everything I can on the one that I use, and it's still pretty limiting. So, I mean, it's nice to have somebody, and I assume Airfoil has folks in-house that can do all that, right?
Yes, we do. We also, you know, we work with partners, we work with, you know, freelance videographers that could be a good fit for certain projects. We're lucky enough to have a client, TechSmith, that makes, really good video editing software that's sort of very easy to use. So yeah, we have a wealth of resources, both intellectual and technological. So, so we're in a good spot there.
Matt, you want to take point three?
Sure.
Trying to get your attention. Yeah.
Well, he's just got me so wrapped
here. I know. Yeah. He's such a speaker.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things, it's just cutting through the clutter, right? I mean, what do you tell people about that? Because we are all so bombarded these days by a million things, you know, grabbing for our attention. And especially younger people, seem really good at multitasking, but boy, it's hard to get their attention. So, so how do you cut through all that?
With respect to generations, there are interesting things that are happening, in terms of how to reach people. I think the older, older generation, meaning, I guess, everybody over the age of, you know, 25 or 30.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was wondering where you're going with that. I was listening very closely.
I'm a ways past that.
Yeah.
I used to tell people
now,
I was 30.
Jessica's only 25, I think, right?
Well, no, I'm 34.
I'm getting that look, so.
I'm sad now.
All right. Yeah. I'm 42, 61, so I'm in that bucket as well. the older
People like us.
Yeah.
They still prefer email. Like if you're talking about, you know, contacting people about, mission critical things, even older, they prefer the phone, you know, pick up and call.
Yeah.
But what's happening at the younger ages is they're more and more gravitating towards social media.
Yep.
So social media is becoming sort of their version of email. If you want to get in touch with them, they're already looking at, you know, these never ending feeds of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, it's more effective to reach out to them over social media. It's still trending in the media space to email, right? Most people like email because it's easily archived. It's easy to reference later.
Yep, that's
that
what I do.
Yep. Yeah, it's easy, easier to file and organize than any social media might have. So, yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that, that I live in Ann Arbor, a lot of college students, and I'm amazed more of them don't get run over, I'll tell you, because they're always walking around with their smartphone, staring at the smartphone, and you, and they step off right in front of you. I mean, I'm you got to drive defensively in Ann Arbor. So, but, I mean, that's really where it's all going, isn't it? The smart, and it's not just the kids. I mean, even the older folks, I've noticed, anybody above 25, I guess, is really spending a lot of time looking at their smartphone. Or worse yet, you're a speaker at a meeting, and you look out over the meeting room, and everyone's looking at their smartphone, and you go, I've lost them.
The,
you know?
Yeah, that's the way I explain that age bracket is anybody too old to be in an old Navy commercial. So it's pretty much 25 and under. So.
So, but I mean, but for capturing journalists' attention, at least I can speak to that. I'd rather get an email. Do not call me. I mean, give me an email, and if I'm interested, I will contact you, you know, kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah, but how do you reach journalists? It's interesting. If it's not email, then what is it, you know, for reaching journalists?
Well, it's increasingly becoming just individual level knowledge of, you know, certain contacts where – if you check a reporter's Twitter feed, a lot of time they'll put in their bio, you know, direct message me if you have a pitch or something like that. So you sort of look for those things. It's smart to look at their social presence first, because they might state a preference to be pitched via social media rather than email.
Yeah.
But I think email is a safe default. You might have to follow up a few times, but I think it's a place that everybody is looking at, you know, at most points of their day. Yeah, so I think that's direct, the best bet.
A direct message on Facebook, if you're somewhat familiar with them, I think that'd be cool. So,
yeah. And one other point I want to make, just as a working journalist, I have a lot of times somebody will send me the information on something and then say to me afterwards, oh, this is embargoed. I go, ah, no. We have to agree up front.
Yeah, right.
We agree, then you send it to me. You know, that sometimes upsets PR people, but, you know, I'm trying to – that's just the rules of the game, right?
Yeah, ideally you get it in writing, but yeah, you're supposed to issue the embargo before giving any more information. So, but that that's one way to get you your attention, though, I guess, right?
It is, yes.
Not a good one.
I'll go ahead and run with it and say, you know. So, but anyway, we only got about a minute left, so let's talk a little bit about airfoil here. We got to make Lisa Valley Smith happy, right? So I know she's listening. Probably Harmony is.
Yes.
So you guys are great. I've worked with you. Well, actually, my company and airfoil started roughly at the same time in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. So we have worked together for a long time. Great. I would give a hearty testimonial that you're a great technology group. But so how do the folks reach out to you? I can do it here. I'm coming down the home stretch for the last show here.
Well, you can visit airfoilgroup.com, where you'll see our beautifully recently redesigned website. And then contact information for me would be Moynihan, Moynihan, at airfoilgroup.com.
All right. Thanks very much, Tim Moynihan, editorial services and media strategist at Airfoil Group. I want to thank Tim and our other guests today, attorney Brian Wassum from Warner, Norcross & Judd, Aaron Richards from the MSU Foundation, talking about the Greenlight Entrepreneur Competition.
And Matt Raj from LTU.
And we will get Kevin Finn, our dean of students, who couldn't be with us today. We will get him on next month, sometime in January. We'll get Kevin on.
Absolutely.
He's a fun interview. He's a great guy. All right. So that's it for today. And that's also it for 2017 here at the M Squared TechCast. I want to thank Jessica, our peerless producer, for all her hard work.
What can we do without Jessica?
Aww, you guys are too sweet.
We would suck without you. We would just be awful.
Be horrible. So we'll be back again on January 8th, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, because we're coming back. So we'll see you then on the M Squared TechCast. For now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
So Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year, Happy Kwanzaa.
And let's make a lot of money in 2018.
Amen.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Roush and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.